7.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
I'm thinking here, ladies and gentlemen, what we could do is package the best of Nick Redfern's Paracast bumpers. What do you think, ladies and gentlemen?
I'm not sure you sell many.
Were you talking about, wait a minute now, the Brits were going to send SEALs with bombs strapped to them and explode them underneath German warships. Now, I bet you they didn't get permission from the ASPCA or some of the animal rights groups.
What they did, they actually, because they didn't want the Germans to find out, they undertook like test experiments and tried to train the SEALs in a North Wales lake called Lake Bala. And this was like 1912, 1913, and the war broke out in 1914. So they had all these trained SEALs and, you know, military people who sort of befriended them, you know, and tried to teach them, where they'd have these just wooden planks or logs attached to them, you know, in place, just as dummies instead of the bombs. And they would try to get them to target just little rowing boats out in the lake. But word got out that something weird was going on in the lake. As you can imagine, it would. You know, the locals were wondering what was going on, seeing all these soldiers turn up, you know, releasing SEALs into the lake and then sort of skulking around after darkness or whatever. And so when the project actually collapsed because the SEALs just couldn't be trained well enough. But when the project collapsed, to protect the secrecy around this project, when the military left, they started spreading rumors that there were lake monsters in Lake Bala. What they actually were these full-size SEALs swimming around that they'd let loose and couldn't recapture. So, in other words, sometimes government files on monsters are open to do background research to allow them then to create these cover stories. You know, you can only create a cover story about lake monsters if you understand some background on lake monsters. So collecting data on the Loch Ness Monster and what it allegedly looks like, how it swims, etc., then allows you to create this cover story, which seems plausible. So it's not often that, you know, very often that they're investigating monsters as such. They're looking as a way and a means to use the data, if you like, in some sort of obscure operation like this one.
Now, in your particular research, did you get any information on how the government is regarding all these cases?
Well, you know, I mean, I think we always need to remember that people think of the government as some unified entity. I mean, one of the things I found, I mean, I think I found this more often in this book than in any other book I've written, is that many of the cases and the things under investigation were undertaken by little groups and projects within agencies. You know, it wasn't like there's a government project to investigate monsters, you know, or an agency that does it. There's nothing like that at all. There are small groups of people within agencies that, you know, may have thought it's a good idea to spread a lake monster story to hide a classified submarine experiment in a lake, which actually did go on. You know, we're looking at think tanks and little projects rather than a unified government agency. And I think sometimes, you know, they took the lead from other agencies. Somebody was successful in doing this or successful in doing that. And so they thought, well, you know, we'll do that and you know, see if we can sort of spook the enemy by spreading stories of monsters on the loose or whatever. That's the important thing, you know, in relation to what the person who asked the question talked about, is a lot of the files on monsters aren't necessarily investigations. They're how the monster myths can be exploited.
Doesn't that apply to UFOs to some degree, too? Maybe to release some information to spook people into thinking more is going on than meets the eye, or maybe spook foreign powers that we have secret weapons that we don't have?
Yeah, I think some point during the Cold War, the penny dropped that the entire range of paranormal phenomena could be used for military capital. You know, I talked about that RAND document earlier and how that mentioned that, you know, the military was spreading stories that the Virgin Mary was on the side of the Allies, etc., in the war and in the immediate years in the Cold War, you know, to try and ruffle the feathers of the Russians and prior to that, the Germans. So, you know, we have the Virgin Mary being used in a psychological warfare operation. We have this sort of robotic thing at Flatwoods, potentially. We have the Lake Bala lake monster story, you know, and we have UFO stories where I'm pretty sure that some cases, you know, are used and spread to cover up tests of classified military aircraft. You know, if one's inadvertently seen by mistake, you know, you slip a few stories out into the local media about little green men, and it all, the original sighting gets buried in this massive, you know, hysteria about aliens invading or whatever.
It's interesting you should bring up using religious miracles as a potential PSYOPs weapon. I remember talking to a French-Canadian guy back in the early 90s named Serge Monast, and he had this just a rather shrill warning for everybody that there was this Project Bluebeam and that we had the technology to create a huge sky-sized hologram of whatever, you know, name, fill in the blank for your religious figure, and that using certain modulated microwaves, they could actually have that hologram talk to you and use your name and stuff. Did you ever run across any sort of validation about a program such as Project Bluebeam?
Well, I mean, Project Bluebeam is sort of like, you know, the ultimate technology where, you know, we're talking about highly sophisticated holograms, you know, to achieve like a ruse in the sky, if you like, you know, a fabrication that people will believe is like a second coming. I didn't find anything that advanced, but again, through the Freedom of Information Act, there are actually files that, in a strange and roundabout way, actually relate to the Cuban Missile Crisis of 1962. And again, these are declassified files through the Freedom of Information Act. And they actually reference in there a very obscure plan established by a man named Major General Edward Lansdale. Lansdale was an expert, like a brilliant brain and mind in the field of psychological warfare. And he came up with a plan that sounds like a very early incarnation of Project Bluebeam. Bear in mind, this was the early 60s, and of course the technology, you know, was fairly just primitive back then. But his idea was to essentially approach stealthily the Cuban coastline and have an aircraft with its engine specifically muffled and modified so it had like a low sound signature, and have it flying back and forth through clouds. Have like a loudspeaker, very, very loud modified speaker, saying, "This is the voice of God. We hereby tell the Cuban people to lay down their weapons and renounce Fidel Castro." And they also had an idea that they would send in like a little black painted boat, you know, that wouldn't be seen, but it would have like a large powerful projector that could project an image of Jesus onto the clouds at the same time that this voice was coming from the clouds. Now, of course, you know, it would have to be, the weather would have to be right, the clouds would have to be there, you'd have to try and ensure that nothing went wrong, that the loudspeaker worked, etc., etc. And ultimately, it wasn't followed through because it was just seen as too bizarre, you know, even for the PSYOPs people. But when you look at the basic outline of what was planned by Lansdale, namely to, you know, fabricate an image of Jesus in the sky with an attendant, you know, audio voice saying, you know, lay down your arms and follow me, so to speak. The premise, if you like, is the same. We're just not talking about any sort of advanced technology, but because it was so primitive, it was like, there's just no way we're going to get away with this, you know, and it was cancelled. But again, that's in the official files. You know, does it validate the idea of Project Bluebeam? Well, no, it doesn't, but you could make the argument that if something like that was going on 50 years ago, is something still being addressed along similar lines today? But in a highly more highly advanced fashion, you know.
Yeah, I've heard some pretty informed sources tell me that we had developed and utilized and actually used in the field during Desert Storm some very sophisticated acoustic psychological weapons platforms that literally drove some of the frontline troops of the Iraqis crazy, and the footage of them coming out and just hugging the feet of Marines and Army personnel, that wasn't by accident that we actually elicited that sort of response from these troops.
Huh. Well, one of the things, I mean, which I mentioned in the book, in Monster Files, I mean, I know you'll know the name of Gabe Valdez. Gabe was a New Mexico State Police officer in the 70s who was heavily involved in studying New Mexico-based cattle mutilation events.
We'll tell our listeners more about who that guy is and about what he did in our next segment with Gene, Chris, and the one and the only Nick Redfern. You're in
the Paracast.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Hi, this is Gary Cooper with Midas Resources Gold and Silver. Don't be surprised when the global elite confiscates money from your bank account one day. They have already very clearly telling you that they're going to do it. With what just happened in Cyprus serving as a blueprint for future bank bailouts, if you are concerned about keeping your money, why not consider storing your wealth in gold and silver? Call me, Gary Cooper, at 1-800-686-2237, extension 130. Together we'll discuss your options of buying gold and silver. Again, the global elite have plans for your money, and it doesn't include you. So call me, Gary Cooper, at 1-800-686-2237, extension 130, and I will send you a booklet with 10 reasons why gold and silver could be right for you. Again, don't get caught with money in your account when the next bank bailout hits. Call me, Gary Cooper, at 1-800-686-2237, extension 130.
What's safer and cheaper than prescription drugs?
Glad you asked. The answer is Renovation Teas. Herbal remedies are much safer and much cheaper than prescription drugs. Taste great, and most importantly, herbal teas are effective and non-addictive. Renovation Tea is especially unique, and here's why. We spent years researching herbs and their beneficial properties. Renovation Teas uses only 100% organic, fair trade herbs. Our teas are blended towards specific ailments and health conditions, such as diabetes, blood pressure, anxiety, libido, detox, and much more. All Renovation Teas are formulated and hand-filled in Arkansas. Take care of yourself naturally, the way Mother Nature intended. Order Renovation Teas at renovationtea.com or call 870-784-3121. That's 870-784-3121. Renovation Teas. Renovate your health one bag at a time.
Are you still a traditional smoker? Now experience a new lifestyle and try vaping with e-cigarettes by LeCig. Imagine no ashes, stains, nasty smell, or coughing and hacking. With LeCig e-cigarettes' revolutionary microelectronic technology, rechargeable battery, and unique replaceable cartridge, you'll get all the benefits and satisfaction of smoking without the hazards. Choose your taste from a wide variety of our new American-made Vaporeon e-liquids at LeCig.com. And LeCig smokes the competition by serving thousands of worldwide customers with real people customer service, fast, free, same-day shipping, and a 30-day warranty and satisfaction guarantee. So are you ready for a new vaping lifestyle? Then call 870-518-4307. That's 870-518-4307. Or visit LeCig.com, spelled LeCig.com. LeCig e-cigarettes for today's modern smoker.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Yes, we'll have both Chris and Nick do the recording, the best of the Paracast bumpers. Nick, you started a response. We had to do that break, but now you can pick up on it.
Yeah, just talking about Gabe Valdez, a New Mexico State police officer who was heavily involved in investigating cattle mutilations in New Mexico in the mid to late 1970s. And I interviewed or met with Gabe in late 2009. Me and Greg Bishop were driving up to a conference up in Angel Fire, New Mexico, and Greg was good friends with Gabe, who died a year or two ago. And so Greg phoned him up and said, hey, you know, you want to meet for lunch? We're stopping off somewhere on the way through. So we met with Gabe in Albuquerque and had lunch with him. And he told a really interesting story about how he'd been told by military personnel that the military, for some bizarre reasons, have been using holographic technology to create imagery of Bigfoot-type creatures. And the answer that Gabe got as to why this was being done was because it was supposedly to frighten superstitious people from sort of hanging around military bases. If you could project suddenly this 8-foot-tall, hairy, glowing-eyed monster, you know, in their immediate vicinity and have them sort of haul ass out of there, that was the idea. And I sort of found this fascinating. You know, I was having lunch sat opposite a highly respected New Mexico State Police officer talking about the military creating holograms of Bigfoot as almost like a paranormal watchdog or guard dog, if you like. Highly sophisticated, technological rather than paranormal, I should say. But it was sort of a very strange story, but, you know, it kind of, I guess, ties in with using, you know, holograms and the paranormal as a means to, you know, provoke like a psychological response.
Well, the Jicarilla Apache, who live around the Dulce area, that's the reservation pretty much surrounds Dulce there. There are a lot of Bigfoot sightings in the area, have been for decades. So that would be a perfect psychological, you know, potential tool to use. Since we're on the subject of Bigfoot, the more amazing things that I found fascinating in your book was, number one, some of the revelations about Tom Slick, the famous well-to-do, I think he was a Texas oil man who funded several very high-profile abominable snowman hunts back in the, I think, what, 50s and 60s, if I remember correctly,
yeah.
And his ties to the American intelligence community. You want to address that a little bit? I found that very fascinating. I had no clue.
Well, yeah, Tom Slick was a millionaire oil man, and his father, Tom Slick Sr., was, you know, made a massive fortune. Of course, when he died, Tom and his siblings, they inherited, you know, a vast fortune. And so Tom Slick really didn't have to work, but he was one of these people who, you know, invested money here and there in different projects and essentially became, you know, a multimillionaire through being a very shrewd businessman. He had a deep fascination for cryptozoology, and he traveled all over the world, you know, investigating things. Before his death in the early 60s, he traveled around the U.S. investigating Bigfoot. One of his main areas of interest was the abominable snowman, or the Yeti, as it's called, which is, you know, reported in the Himalayas, Tibet, etc., and in reports in parts of China, in the forests of China and India. Now, in the mid to late 50s, Tom Slick went on a number of expeditions and also sponsored and organized several as well to look for the Yeti. Now, what's interesting is that this was at the very time when there was a great deal of turmoil between the people of Tibet and the people of China. You know, it was almost on the verge of warfare breaking out. The U.S. military and the British military at the time were deeply concerned, you know, that hostilities were going to break out. And so they needed raw intelligence data at a ground level, if you like, kind of what I was talking about earlier, you know, about having sort of raw intelligence gathering techniques. So they wanted people in place who could collect information and report back on, you know, what was being said in Tibet and what was being said in China and what was going down. So they needed someone who was like a definitive player, you know, knew people around town, who knew how to get hooked up and plugged in with the right people, etc. And so they reportedly chose Tom Slick. And although Tom Slick's Yeti hunts were legitimate, you know, he did have a real deep passion for it and was looking for the Yeti, there are very strong indications that he was also doing a little bit of sort of sly spying on the Chinese at the same time. And if questioned, you know, he could legitimately say, well, you know, sorry guys, I'm just in the area looking for the Yeti. But it acted as a good cover. So in other words, he was doing legitimate monster hunting research, but he had another agenda as well. And he was actually tied in with a number of well-to-do people. He had a deep connection with one of the businesses he was involved with the Bush family, even George Bush Sr. He's also a very close friend with Howard Hughes, who was deeply plugged into the CIA. So, you know, we've got somebody with all these deep, strong connections who was in the right area at the right time, who was like a definitive player and knew everybody everywhere. There was a plausible cover story that it was just there hunting monsters. So, again, you know, this demonstrates how what looks like, you know, the government investigating monsters is actually something very different, where the monster angle is sort of tangential to a greater goal, if you like.
So do you feel some of the cases that maybe you unearthed this way are meant to have something that was not related to monsters?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I mean, I talk about a number of cases in the book where, you know, the monster angle was just a byproduct, or it was used, as I said, as a convenient cover story. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean the creatures don't exist, but I think sometimes the agencies didn't really care. You know, I don't think the CIA, that when Tom Slick was in Tibet, I honestly don't think the CIA could have cared less if the Yeti really existed. But they did deeply care about the fact that it was a legend that could be used as a cover. You know, I would be very surprised if there are CIA files on an actual search for a Yeti. You know, that would, I'd be amazed. I'd be pleased, but I'd be amazed. And I think it's doubtful. But, you know, one day maybe we'll get to see the hard evidence, you know, as it relates to Tom Slick's involvement and how far it actually went.
So how then do you separate the possible government disinformation from what appears to be genuine sightings of strange creatures?
Well, I would have to be honest with you and say very carefully, because it's one of these situations where when you're dealing with files that have officially surfaced decades later, you know, maybe 40, 50 years in some cases, most of the people are probably dead and long gone. So it's difficult to really determine anything with any solid degree. That's why the Flatwoods thing is such an enigma, because, you know, it could go either way still even now, I think, even though I personally do think the PSYOP angle is probably the correct one. But, you know, you have to have an open mind. And, you know, for me, I don't find it disappointing if a government agency has exploited a monster myth to hide something else. I find it fascinating. And it doesn't, for me, negate the possibility of a real creature existing. So I think, you know, we need to be open-minded and not get caught up with wanting it to be this or wanting it to be that. That's something I've always tried to avoid, is wanting to, not to quote the X-Files, but wanting to believe in something. I just go where the data leads me, and if it leads to a real creature, that's amazing. If it leads to some bizarre project, well, in its own way, that's amazing too.
Before we get too bizarre, this is the bizarre Gene Steinberg with the sometimes bizarre Chris O'Brien and the always eternally bizarre Nick Redfern. You're in.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also print catalogs. Convert from so many formats I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
In the last 2 years alone, the U.S. has seen huge losses to our food supply. In 2011, storms and floods raged across the U.S., costing us $20 billion in lost crops alone. In 2012, we saw the largest drought in the country in more than 50 years. You may think out of sight, out of mind, and so you don't think you will be affected. The fact is, you are. We all are. Food shortages drive prices up for everyone. You might not be able to control Mother Nature, but you can control your food prices by freezing the cost and availability of your food supply. supply with eFoods Direct. Be prepared before you need it with nutrient-dense food you can store for up to 25 years. You can hope for the best, but hope won't feed you. Do what I've done and get your own supply of the best storable foods out there from eFoods Direct. Call 800-409-5633 or visit them on the web at eFoodsDirect.com/Alex and check out their spring specials. Again, that number is 800-409-5633 or on the web at eFoodsDirect.com/Alex. You can bet your life on eFoods Direct.
Your home alarm works after an intruder is inside your home, but real home security begins before intruders enter. Burglaries and home invasions are at an all-time high, and crime is skyrocketing in rural and suburban areas. 85% of break-ins are through a door, and police response is often greater than 20 minutes. You can't afford to wait that long. Stop burglars with police-tested and recommended Easy Armor from Armor Concepts. Easy Armor keeps intruders out. It's barely visible and installs easily. Easy Armor reinforces a door weak points, comes in three colors, and is guaranteed to stop kick-ins. Get Easy Armor now and get peace of mind. Order by calling 888-58-ARMOR. That's 888-582-7667. Or go to easyarmor.net. Spelled E-Z-A-R-M-O-R.net. Special offer only available to GCN listeners. Ask about it when you call for your Easy Armor today from Armor Concepts. Ultimate door security made easy.
Big business has discovered the preparedness market, and that makes it difficult to know where to go and who to trust. MyPatriotSupply.com is owned and operated by patriots just like you, has the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more. MyPatriotSupply.com has old-fashioned values and the absolute best customer service in the industry. Look for the deal of the day, unique, affordable survival supplies that fit anyone's budget. Get same-day shipping on all orders and free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927. 866-229-0927. Or visit MyPatriotSupply.com for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence. Shop with a name you know and a name you can trust. Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Hi, my name is Richard Dolan. You're listening to the Paracast.
What was that?
Nick's afraid to say he was possessed briefly.
Yeah, that was me being possessed. I haven't got the swiveling head yet, but I might puke up some pea soup in a minute. I don't know.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you're eating dinner right now, we suggest that you basically stop, put the forks and fingers and the knives down, and the spoons especially, and just sit back and listen. This stuff gets pretty grisly.
Since we're on the subject of Bigfoot, probably the most fascinating Bigfoot part, at least to me from your book, was the wonderful stories and rumors surrounding the aftermath of the eruption of Mount St. Helens in May of 1980. You know, I think some of us out there in the listening audience have heard, you know, little hints and rumors of Bigfoot bodies being recovered by the government. You look at this subject and came up with some pretty surprising details on some of the rumors. So you care to address those?
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, Mount St. Helens, I mean, erupted in May 1980. You know, it had this massive explosion that just sort of devastated the entire surrounding area. It was actually sort of May 18th. When the mountain exploded, the debris was shown to have actually been sort of crumbling and falling at no less than 150 miles an hour. That's how the speed it was blasted out at. And it created this sort of huge volcanic ash, almost like a mushroom cloud, that reached 80,000 feet. And it flattened an area something like 19 by 23 miles, I think, was the actual distance. And something like
including the notorious Ape Canyon.
Exactly, and almost 60 people died who decided, you know, they weren't going to leave their homes. Now, what we do know is that roughly 5,000 deer were killed, more than 1,000 elk, and somewhere in the region of 12 million salmon. So a lot of the local known and identified animal population perished when Mount St. Helens exploded. Now, you mentioned Ape Canyon, which is relates to a famous case in the 1920s where there was sort of these hostile Bigfoot reportedly on the loose and attacking people even. If Bigfoot is a real flesh and blood animal and was living in the vicinity of Mount St. Helens, or actually on Mount St. Helens, then arguably some of those would probably have been killed as well. And a number of researchers over the years have been approached by military people or claim to be military people saying, you know, I was involved or had awareness of how in the immediate aftermath when they were checking the mountain out, you know, and finding bodies of dead deer and things like that, the soldiers also stumbled upon a number of burned and dead bodies and in some cases like critically injured Bigfoot. And there are stories about them being sort of airlifted out by things like double rotor Chinook helicopters and, you know, in sort of huge nets, powerful nets, and taken to who knows where. And from there, the stories have sort of been expanded into autopsies of Bigfoot at military bases and that kind of thing. As I point out in the book, a lot of the material I use is Freedom of Information documentation. This chapter is solely based upon researchers whose words I've quoted or, you know, who I've interviewed, and where they've spoken to off-the-record sources, if you like, military people who've made these claims. So, unfortunately, you know, we don't have a definitive smoking gun in the form of an official document that confirms anybody was looking for Bigfoot or anything was found. What we have are military people who, thus far at least, haven't been willing to go on the record. And, you know, I point that out. I think it's important to stress that. It doesn't necessarily negate the stories. It just means we've got to sort of dig harder to try and find some form of verification. But admittedly, you know, the very fact that five or six researchers across three decades have received similar stories but not identical ones, for me, is a good point to that, you know, where there's smoke, sometimes there really is fire.
Well, one of the interesting details was in one of these alleged, I guess, rumors or off-the-record comments, a Bigfoot was actually involved with one of the recovery teams, according to this particular story. Do you want to...
Yeah, this is really bizarre because it talks about, you know, the Bigfoot, I guess, not being just like an unknown ape, but something that was secretly known of by the military. And the story is that, you know, one of these creatures that survived, possibly in injured form to a degree, actually sort of helped the recovery team by identifying where these injured Bigfoot were by sort of using a distress call and getting a reply back and then following the cries to the area and leading the military personnel and the medical teams to where these injured Bigfoot were, and then, you know, ferrying them out the area. So, you know, if that's not a hoax or a exaggeration or a psyop or whatever, you know, it suggests that Bigfoot is more than just a flesh and blood ape, which ironically I actually believe it is. I think there are a lot of weird paranormal aspects to Bigfoot. I don't think it's just the equivalent of like an African gorilla, a mountain gorilla. I think it's something far weirder than that. So, you know, who knows? Maybe there has been some sort of collusion or, you know, contact in some form.
One of our questioners is interested. He heard you on another show, and you mentioned kind of a multidimensional aspect that you think might be there. We've talked about this with you in the past, but what's your thinking on that now that we're talking about that?
Don't consider myself a cryptozoologist. I would consider myself a 14 who has a deep interest in cryptozoology, which is a big difference. Most mainstream cryptozoologists will tell you honestly that they're looking for unknown animals or, you know, possibly creatures that science believes has become extinct but that maybe haven't, things like that. For me, you know, I'm quite comfortable including in cryptozoology animals that seem far weirder than just flesh and blood. Now, there are a number of reports of Bigfoot. Now, granted, it's not like 70-80%. It's probably 7 or 8%. And most researchers of Bigfoot, if they're honest with themselves and everybody else, they will have at least a few reports like this on file where somebody has seen a Bigfoot and it's been reported at the same time and same location as weird lights in the sky or UFOs, or the witness to the Bigfoot has got a visit from a man in black type character, or the creature itself has like vanished in a flash of light, or just literally vanished in like a green fog, as some people have talked about. Because Bigfoot is so definitively elusive and always evades capture and bullets never seem to affect it, I kind of wonder if maybe Bigfoot is something that is temporarily passing through our world. That's why it's so, you know, it has this here one minute, gone the next flavor to it, if you like. And I think, you know, maybe it uses wormholes and dimensions and things like that. And maybe that would explain why military agencies are interested. Perhaps the interest is less based around Bigfoot, but more around trying to understand how these wormholes can be accessed for military gain. I think there's a good, it sounds bizarre and controversial, but, you know, I don't care about dealing with bizarre and controversial subjects, you know.
Hey, it's the Paracast.
Hi, I'm bizarre, he's controversial.
Yeah, I mean, for me, you know, I don't worry about what people think of me. I don't have no reputation to lose, you know. So for me, I actually think there is something to this, that Bigfoot could be something that it potentially exists in another reality and temporarily appears in ours. And, of course, understanding how that could occur would be a major development for any military agency. And so, again, I think the military could be less interested in Bigfoot, but more interested in its capabilities.
Well, that also brings up that classic case of a world-class physicist up at Sherman Ranch, or the Skinwalker Ranch, observing a portal opening up in the air, and what appeared to be a large, oversized humanoid form crawling out of this portal in the air.
Yeah, the Skinwalker Ranch, to me, sort of typifies why I do believe in these portals and doorways potentially being stationary in certain areas, or temporarily stationary, because we find certain places all around the world that seem to be hotspots for a wide range of different phenomena that seemingly appear unconnected, but they're all in one place. I mean, the Cannock Chase Forest and woods near where I grew up in central England, they're like a hotbed for UFOs, Bigfoot, werewolf-type creatures, you know, which you could possibly apply as skinwalkers, phantom-like ghostly creatures, ghostly black dogs, paranormal large black cats looking like sort of like a black leopard but vanishing in the blink of an eye, and they're all in this one area of forest called the Cannock Chase. And you can find places like this, like the Skinwalker Ranch, all around the world that seem to be like magnets for weirdness. And I think there's something to the idea that, you know, perhaps these stationary areas are slightly equivalent to jumping on a paranormal equivalent of the New York subway or the London Underground, you know, and then getting off at another stop and getting back on and jumping off again or whatever.
That's even better than using Scotty's transporter. We have Nick Redfern. The book is called Monster Files. With Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Whether it's personal mail, whether it's business email, you want reliable, dependable delivery, freedom from spam, freedom from viruses. Well, Polaris Mail offers professional email hosting services for your personal or small business use. Each account uses 25 gigabytes of storage, an easy-to-use webmail interface, and full mobile sync. Sign up today for a 30-day free trial at PolarisMail.com, PolarisMail.com.
So here's what happened. I was placing an order online. The site went down. It just stopped responding. It took hours before it returned, but I'd already placed the order with another company. If your site goes down, you could lose business. And if you have a business or personal site, you'll want to know it's easy to run and it will stay online. At iWeb, your site is hosted on one of the most reliable networks in the world. Check it out. iWeb.com. That's iWeb.com.
Introducing a 30-day emergency food supply for only $99. At 30dayfoodsupply.com, you can purchase Oregon Trail Foods' one-month supply of high-quality, nutritious, and healthy emergency meals for less than $100. These vegetarian meals are all-natural, non-GMO, high in carbs and protein, and are packed with oxygen absorbers in Mylar pouches. They take up to 70% less space than number 10 cans, have a 20-year shelf life, and huge portions, over twice the serving size of some competitors' Stores Meals, Oregon Trail Foods, and 30dayfoodsupply.com keep prices low by buying direct from producers in Oregon and then pass the savings on to you. Purchase a 30-day 90-serving emergency food supply for only $99 this month, and $10 ships your entire order to the lower 48. Call 541-673-6666 or visit 30dayfoodsupply.com, where they make preparedness affordable. 30dayfoodsupply.com. Got it? Get it. Go to 30dayfoodsupply.com.
The government's Department of Homeland Security is buying up loads of ammo. At the same time, they're restricting civilians' rights to own and purchase firearms. Can you put two and two together? Infidel Body Armor can stop every round, including hollow points and 308 sniper rounds, is reasonably priced and fully legal. But for how long? Go to InfidelBodyArmor.com, spelled I-N-F-I-D-E-L, BodyArmor.com. Infidel Body Armor. Just won't quit.
We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Hi, Ted Anderson. I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
If you want to approach companies with your invention, the first step is to secure your patent rights. We are Russ Weinzimmer & Associates, a national law firm dedicated to helping you get strong protection for your invention. Already selling a product based on your invention? There may still be time to lock in your rights. Just call us at 800-621-3654 for your confidential free consultation. Or visit strategicpatentlaw.com. That's strategicpatentlaw.com.
Attention, preppers. Think you've got everything? Think again. You need rescue tape. The ultimate emergency repair tape. Used by the U.S. Army on trucks and tanks as part of their battle damage repair kit. Rescue tape is 20 times stronger than duct tape. Rescue tape repairs leaky pipes and hoses up to 500 degrees. Waterproofs electrical connections. And even works right over oily, dirty surfaces. Rescue tape belongs in every prepper's survival kit, bug out bag, and emergency kit. Get rescued or just get stuck. Learn more at rescuetape.com.
Hello, this is Rosemary Ellen Guiley, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
It is astounding how bizarre this show gets. But we have Nick Redfern kind of joining us here to talk about all sorts of bizarre things going on, I have to tell you.
I used to live in a bizarre place.
Bizarre's good.
I still do, actually, but it's a different bizarre place.
All right. Well, there you go. We've got more questions from our audience.
Well, Nick, you bring it out in people. We've answered a bunch of them. But here's one that's kind of interesting. I'm not sure what to make of it. This comes from Spooky Mulder, who's been a Paracast forum poster for a couple of years. And he says, Nick, what is your slant on the checkered shirt phenomenon, which is being reported on beings from Bigfoot to the Grinning Man? Now, that's news to me. You want to fill us in? What's he talking about?
It's actually a very weird phenomenon that somebody really should do like a definitive paper on it. But throughout the years, and John Keel found a number of these cases, and that's how far it stretches back. There are a lot of reports that seemingly nobody really puts the pieces together and realizes, but, you know, some people like you, like Spooky, do. And John Keel did that certain phenomena, you know, humanoid type creatures, whether it's Bigfoot type creatures occasionally, hairy wild men, or just sort of creatures that look human that seem paranormal, they're often reported wearing like check shirts. I know it sounds totally bizarre, but if you Google sort of check shirts and paranormal phenomena, you actually find this trend where they pop up wearing check shirts, you know, and it almost sounds like some sort of weird trickster type angle, you know, that's just play and screw around with people's minds by wearing check shirts and see who notices it and who gets obsessed by it and, you know, devotes their life to it or whatever, you know, and sort of manipulated by the trickster. But, I mean, I've never actually investigated it, but I've read about it. And it's one of these things where, you know, it almost defies explanation or description. And the best I can say is to me, it does sound like some weird and bizarre trickster-like trick, you know. Let's just screw around with the natives and, you know, have one of these characters pop up in a Czech shirt every so often.
It kind of reminds me of the shadow men that wear hats, that wear fedoras.
Well, yeah, I mean, I sometimes think that there's like a crossover between the Men in Black and the Shadow People. You know, sometimes the Men in Black do seem like flesh and blood people. Other times, you know, they have this sort of occult aspect to them. And then on the other side, you have the more insubstantial, sort of ethereal shadow people. It's almost like it appears in three forms, kind of like an ethereal, insubstantial form, then an occult form, then a fully flesh and blood human, as if it's, you know, sort of mutating or changing. And, you know, kind of like, you know, you can have water, can be in the form of a gas in steam, you know, it can be a liquid, it can be a solid in the form of ice. You know, maybe it's all one entity, you know, in different forms of existence, possibly.
I have a question from a first-time poster. I'm pretty sure this might be one of the first times someone has actually posted their first time asking a question of a guest. This one comes from OS Prime, who signed up at forum.theparacast.com on Sunday. And he says, Nick, with all the documents and reports the government, U.S., foreign, and otherwise, seem to have referring to all these monsters and creatures, do you know of any country, state, city, or province that might have an actual protocol on how to handle an appearance or an attack by one of these cuddly creatures?
I'm not aware of any sort of area or province that, you know, has guidelines in place. But, I mean, Frank, I'll give you a good example. It's, again, through the Freedom of Information Act. When Tom Slick was in Tibet in the late 1950s, the U.S. State Department, you know, had an office in Tibet. And they actually relayed throughout their office and to various agencies guidelines that have been laid down by the people of Tibet, which should be adhered to in the event that somebody goes on a Yeti hunt. And the documents talk about that, you know, if somebody's allowed in the country in Tibet and, you know, they want to go on a Yeti hunt, they have to sign like a document saying they won't shoot to kill it. And if they take any photographs, the pictures have to be handed over to the Tibetan government immediately for study. And this is all in the U.S. State Department documents. I actually reproduce one of the documents in the book in a photograph form. And it's sort of fascinating that this legislation not only existed, but, you know, the U.S. government was helping the Tibetan government to, you know, keep these guidelines in place and warning people like Tom Slick, you know, if you find one of these, you will not shoot it, you know, otherwise there's going to be hell to pay. That, I guess that is sort of pretty much, you know, along the lines of what the questioner was asking. It doesn't sort of relate to what would happen if a person got attacked, but it does relate to what would happen to a person if they tried to kill one of these creatures, which I guess would be on the endangered species list one day. So.
Yeah, I would think you would find these types of protocols would probably be more apt to find them in an Asian country, possibly South America. So that was a good question for a first-time poster, I must say.
Yeah.
This is going back to one of our newer posters, Talking Meat Suit, who used to be known as Yeti Turds for Sale, I think.
And I think we all understand why he changed that name. You know, there's no secret about it.
It was memorable. You know, you won't forget it.
That's true. Well, I think this is almost an unfair question. I know all your books are like babies. You love them all. But what book are you least proud of, and what book are you most proud of? And you're going to have to probably think about that.
That's a very good question. I think my favorite book is one I did last year. It's called Wild Man. And that's a study of the very little-known phenomenon of Bigfoot in Britain. The reason I wrote it was because when I grew up, the area in central England where I grew up as a kid, very heavily forested, you had a famous legend of a creature known as the man monkey, which was sort of this large chimpanzee-like semi-human, primitive human ape-type creature that reportedly haunted an old bridge that crossed an equally old canal in central England. And, of course, bridges, you know, are tied with paranormal phenomena all around the world. It's just part of our psyche and our culture. It fascinated me, this particular story. The more I dug into it, the more I found more and more reports of Bigfoot-type creatures in Britain. And that's one of my sort of pet subjects. And I finally wrote a full-length book on it, about 300 pages long, which came out last year, called Wild Man. That was the one book I always wanted to do. So that was probably the the favorite book of mine. You know, you can always sort of look, I guess it's like a band, you know, you always want to go back and make a change to the guitar solo or the drum sound, you know. I think probably the least favorite of mine was a book I wrote in 1999, which was called Cosmic Crashes. And that was a study of what we might call British Roswells. And I wrote it road trip style of sort of going around the UK, traveling to alleged crash sites and interviewing people. And the problem with the book, from my perspective, looking back with hindsight now, is that it was too belief-driven. You know, I sort of wanted, I wrote it, it was clear, you know, my mindset back then was still in the extraterrestrial mode, and I wanted there to have been a British Roswell. And I should have been more open-minded into the idea of, you know, was a crash UFO story created to hide a crash of a classified British military aircraft, or, you know, was it just a hoax or whatever? I was too caught up in the wanting to believe angle, and it wasn't balanced enough. So it wasn't so much I don't like the book. With hindsight, I should have written it in a, you know, a more balanced fashion.
Huh, interesting, yeah, because you are very, very, you're even-keeled and very objective in your writing.
Well, I try to be, but I mean, I recognize that in that one I wasn't, because, you know, I did get too wrapped up. I mean, sometimes, because I'm balanced, people say, oh, you're fence-sitting. Well, I'm not, you know, it's like if people ask me, like Flatwoods, I honestly can't give you a straight answer as to whether it was a real creature or a psyop. You know, I can give my opinion that I think the psyop is more likely, but for me to stamp my feet and say, it was a psyop, you know, that's stupid. I can't do that because, yeah, you know, there isn't enough data in. And I think sometimes the will and the want to believe in something crosses the line where people, yeah, do say, well, this is the answer. It's got to be, you know. And that's, yeah, the mistake I made with Cosmic Crashes. So.
Yeah, it slants our thinking and kind of shades our conclusions.
Yeah, no, good question. I've never, yeah, asked that question before. That was a good one.
Well, back to the Flatwoods Monster. Since we haven't seen it again, perhaps it was a 12-foot alien that just didn't find West Virginia girls very attractive or something.
Oh, okay, all right.
Is this kind of like the one-off cases where you have one particular event, it is never repeated again, and that's an interesting question to even pursue, which is, do you think that when you have events that are not repeated, they have a lesser or greater chance of being authentic? Now, I guess from a scientific point of view, that goes against the grain, because scientists want to replicate everything. They want to show that the phenomenon is repeatable somehow, somewhere, and therefore, if they could repeat the phenomenon, they could demonstrate their explanation. But when you get a one-off event, you know, all bets are off, ladies and gentlemen. You never know what caused them unless you have some more evidence. And sometimes just the evidence of your eyes may not be sufficient. And so it goes. We have Nick Redfern. The book is Monster Files. And we have the monster Chris O'Brien with Raw. And the not-so-monstrous Gene Steinberg, because you're in
the Paracast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
It's time to prepare for an uncertain future at the Midwest Self-Reliance Festival. June 28th, 29th, and 30th at the Val Air Ballroom in Des Moines. Tickets are only $6 per day or $12 for a three-day pass. Speakers include Jackie Clay of Backwoods Home Magazine, Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy of Doom and Bloom, and Jack Spearco of the Survival Podcast. There's 100 free conceal and handgun classes each day, and you'll gain valuable knowledge as you learn how to prepare with beekeeping, soap making, canning supplies, cooking with solar, gold and silver, seed banks, and water purification. There's even a free apple seed shoot for the kids. Check out the Youngevity booth and the health product line with pharmacist Keith Abel, speaking about natural healthy living. The Midwest Self-Reliance Festival, June 28th, 29th, and 30th in Des Moines, Iowa. Presented by My Patriot Supply and sponsored by Genesis Communications Network. Visit valairballroom.com for tickets and find us on Facebook at the Midwest Self-Reliance Festival.